I'm Trudy Kerr, and welcome to The Interviewer. In this series, I talk to artists, campaigners, men and women of influence, musicians, performers, sportsmen and women, politicians, businessmen and women, and anyone who shapes the fabric of our society. My guest today comes from a rather well-known family. In fact, two of my guest's three brothers have already featured on The Interviewer: athlete and entrepreneur Nathan Faruja and musician and recording artist Toby Faruja. But Sam has taken a little more persuading and patience. But at last, I've managed to get him on the show. I started following Sam when he was living in New Zealand and leading a team of 10 chefs on the other side of the world. Sam had fallen in love with cooking from a young age, possibly influenced by his great-grandfather, who was the personal chef to the British governor in Malta. And Sam carved out a career for himself around the world. But in recent years, family circumstances meant that Sam headed back from down under, back to our island, to take up the title the Maltese cook. And last year, in the height of the pandemic, Sam launched Fatiya, a business creating gourmet fatira, along with helping those who wanted to get fit through ready-supplied meals for Six Pack Revolution, and his mysterious Trust the Chef, which we'll find out more about later. But first of all, Sam, welcome to The Interview at last.
Thank you for having me. It's... wow.
You're so welcome, but it has taken a bit of a while to get here.
It has. And my apologies for that.
No, I will forgive you one day.
Well, this is a start to something that I've always been nervous about, so...
Wow! Okay, all right.
So you are the first.
You're not entirely comfortable with interview.
No.
God bless you.
No. I've made the first step. I'm here, so I will try my best.
You're going to love it.
My words.
Absolutely love it. Well, let's start off with your interest in cooking and all things food. Did this really come from your great-grandfather? What led you into food?
It has. It's always been, you know, my dad always, before I actually went into focusing on, you know, my actual studies after secondary school, my dad always put it out there that, you know, we always had someone in the family that cooked, that was a brilliant chef. And, I love art, anything to do with art. I love in general, I love film. And he always thought I'd be good at pastry, so the sweet section of catering.
Hang on a second, why? Your dad decided that he's got four sons, he's going to assign one son to be a chef, and that son is going to be a pastry chef. Why pastry?
Yeah, I think that was a good enough...
Was that self-motivation?
Yes.
He wanted cake.
I think it's more the art, the artistry that comes with pastry, with regards to decorating cakes, and you know, or you need to be quite what's the word when it comes to plating. There's you need to be very precise when it comes to pastry, to desserts and all that. So he thought I would be good at that, so I gave it a go. I went to ITS catering school, and basically they teach you the general idea of cooking, and they basically ease you into it. And for me, it was totally new. And in the class there were loads of students that, you know, their parents had restaurants, their moms or their dads. So these guys, they were already experienced at the age of 18. And I probably, sorry, mom, but I've never cooked an egg in my life. So it was from one extreme to the other. So anyway, I heavily focused on pastry.
Sorry, I'm just going to go back and pick this up again.
Yeah.
You went to ITS to start at training school to become a chef, and you've never boiled an egg.
I've never boiled an egg in my life. So,
walking into the doors of this ITS, did you not feel a massive fraud?
It was definitely overwhelming, intimidating, but it was an amazing challenge. I love challenges. You know, I never really knew what I wanted to do as a kid. And And it actually shows in my career so far as a chef, because I'm always looking for new things. With what I'm cooking, with who I'm working with, where I'm working. So yes, it's been a roller coaster, but it's been an absolutely great 18 years now since
heavens
since I entered those doors in
Kintyre. And that was down to your dad putting this thought in your head because he wanted cake.
Pretty much. And he's not a big man too. He does have a sweet tooth though.
Well, let's go back to what kind of chef you are now, because you just mentioned that you're quite experimental. If you had to describe yourself as a chef, how would you do it? What would you say about yourself?
Wow. That's probably a first. What would I say? I love to think outside the box with everything I do.
Well, that's a really good place to start, that you like thinking outside the box. So if I was to have something that you'd cook for me, it's going to be not something I've had before.
No, and I'm a sucker from learning from others. So everything I cook is usually influenced through others. So, and that is probably one of the main reasons why I wanted to travel. There's some amazing places on the island, but it's always different when you're getting an overseas, outside, you know, influence. We are rock, we have our traditional ways, but then again, overseas influence is relatively limited, you know, compared to bigger countries out there. So that was my way of thinking outside of the box, basically, getting outside of the country. So a lot of the stuff that has created my career, my palate, the dishes that I've created, there's probably pieces from everyone that I've picked along the way. That's a lot of chefs that I've worked with. So it's really hard to actually say, you know, what kind of chef I am, because in all honesty, I've always struggled to answer that question, because I don't know, I'm a bit of a sponge when it comes to, you know, learning, and it's one of the best industries to learn. You never stop learning.
Well, you mentioned there that you went abroad, and this has been a key part of your journey. So how long after you graduated did you find yourself being drawn to leave the Maltese Islands, and where did you go?
So there was a four-year course in ITS, and I probably spent the same amount after I graduated working in hotels and restaurants. I would say I worked in about four or five. So yes, I was 25, 26 at that time. And yes, I mean, I worked in some great places in that time, and I learned a lot.
But what countries did you go to? Where did you start? So then, and what was the journey?
So then I basically, the perfect excuse for me was to go to Australia. I've got family there. They were based in Sydney. And that was I needed an excuse, because I was very comfortable here. I had no idea what to expect on the other side of the world. I knew I wanted to get as far away as possible from Europe, just because I really wanted to experience full independence.
Because I was about to say, Australia is not known necessarily for its fine cuisine.
Oh, you'd be surprised, though. You'd be surprised. Obviously, I did a fair bit of research before going there, and there was such a great response with the restaurants. So I was shocked to realize that in a matter of a week of applying for jobs, I got 20 interviews lined up. So that actually kind of got me thinking that, okay, maybe, like you just said, that they are. But I definitely was proven wrong. They are amazing in that industry. They are miles ahead from a lot. Definitely this part of the world.
Explain to them, in what regard? You say they're miles ahead, so tell me.
They obviously are really influenced by you know, people who have migrated there over loads of time. There's a massive Asian influence there, obviously European influence as well. They have a really, how can I explain their cuisine? There's a lot of creativity when it comes to flavors, techniques, all sorts. It's an absolutely brilliant place to work or to experience, even as an outsider, just to get a bit of a taste of a totally different culture. Totally different culture. And their balance is incredible. Their life balance there made me realize, wow, I can actually be a chef, work my butt off, and still have time to enjoy the country.
How long were you in Australia, and then where did you go from there?
So I was in Australia for two years. So basically the plan was always to go there, get as much experience working, and obviously see as much of the country as possible. So what I did was I basically worked in places, told them that I'm there for a few months. I'll work as hard as I can in those few months, and then I'll move on. So what I did was I basically backpacked around the country and did the loop twice over 2 years. One of the craziest places I've ever worked was in a roadhouse 162 kilometers inland from the northwest coast. Just literally a roadhouse. You can just stay overnight, you can fill your tank. But it was one of the most, that was proper Crocodile Dundee place. Kind of, you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning, you go to the bathroom and you find a big cow blocking your way. It was nuts. Or you wake up in the morning and you go to have a quick swim and you find a crocodile in the pool. It was it was insane. Well, you need to experience something like that to actually realize how mad it is, that part of the country.
So then you decided that was enough, that you'd done what you needed to do. Where did you go from there?
So basically after that, I said, okay, I'm going to give Malta a second chance. Not a second chance, but I just felt I needed to move back and spend a bit of quality time with the family. So I came back here for a summer. And then basically I got a really cool opportunity in Italy to work in a small renovated tower, a torre. The way they got me there was they gave me a call, they called me up. They said we're launching this they're launching the new Jaguar, sports Jaguar, and we basically need someone to cook for all the journalists around the world who are coming to stay at this tower. I was like, okay, I'm packing my bags now. I'll see you soon. I really got the bug. So I did that. That was absolutely brilliant. There were all sorts of people. There were princes. There were personalities from India. Loads of people from Japan and other Asian countries. And that was really interesting because, again, I had never been to Italy before. The owners were Scottish and her partner was Chinese. So they said, cook whatever you want. And I was like,
hang on a
second, sure?
Hang on a second. You've been invited to Italy to prepare the food, cook the food for the launch of the Jaguar. So what did you cook?
Keys to the kitchen. a bit of everything, actually. It was quite hard to come up with a menu when, you know, you've got people from every corner of the world coming to, I mean, they weren't really coming for the food, they were coming for the car, but it had to be at the same, you know, level standard of, you know, that quality of a vehicle. It was a very creative menu. It was daily changing menu.
And how many people are we talking about that you were cooking
there
for?
I think there were 20 each night. It was for 2 weeks. So it was a full-on 2 weeks.
Every night you're cooking for 20 people and you're cooking for VIPs.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
yeah.
You have obviously a whole kitchen to help you.
Yes, 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 of course.
Thank goodness.
Of course. But it was in a beautiful place in Umbria. Just, it was magical. It was really, really, really beautiful place.
So after the 2 weeks, where did you go from there?
Yes, then I went straight to New Zealand.
So then you went to New Zealand, and this is where I picked up your story, because I already knew both your brothers and they would reshare your story. You went to New Zealand, North or South Island?
I went to the South.
You went to the South Island?
South of the South.
Good heavens.
Yeah.
Why?
In between Australia and moving back to Malta, I took a quick holiday, and one of those places was New Zealand. It was very...
That's not a quick holiday, Sam. It takes 50 hours to get there. I've done it from Malta.
No. As in before moving back. So I went straight from Australia to New Zealand.
Okay. And
I basically fell in love with the place. And I just basically kept on thinking about it. It was probably one of the best times of my life. Those 4 years there were wow.
Why?
I have a second family now. And my boss became my best friend. They are just an amazing company to work for. They own a few restaurants. And again, there were many similarities to Australia, where they allowed me to see their country, and they respect your time.
What was the culinary opportunities like, though?
They were really big on game there. On their menu was all the stuff that you can find in South Island. So there was loads of venison on the menu. There was different cuts of venison. There was also a lot of seafood that is absolutely delicious down there. They've got beautiful cod, but very different to the cod that you find on this side of the world. It's much tastier because there's higher fat content in it. So, but yeah, the menu was huge. I think it took me a good amount of time to actually, memorize and really feel super confident with that menu. 2 weeks prior to me starting, they were one of the best restaurants in New Zealand. So they were top 10 restaurants. So I was flicking through their previous photos on social media and TripAdvisor, and I was seeing everything was beautiful. I went for my interview. Long story short, the head chef, who was the owner, just literally handed me over a chef's jacket and said, "You can start." So basically, they just really changed things up to make it a lot more casual, using all the techniques that you would find in a fine dining restaurant. But everything is sharing, and everything comes out when ready. So it was, the atmosphere there was, wow, it was incredible.
But you talk about this, and you talk about also that this team that you're with are more like a family than they were colleagues or your boss. And of course, I saw you on socials going out and experiencing the islands. Why come back? Why come back to Malta? What happened?
Dad. Long story short, my brother was packing his bags, Toby, to go to the airport to come visit me. My brother basically called me, and he managed to get in touch with me, and he said, "You need to come back." And I was like, "What do you mean? You're supposed to be here in a day." He said, basically, "Dad's unwell, and he might not make it to tomorrow." I packed my bags, and I came straight down to Malta, went straight to the hospital. My elder brother came up to me, and I'll never forget it. He said, "Don't freak out when you see Dad, because you're not going to recognize him, because he's basically just skin and bones, and he was in a coma." I'm quite close to my dad, so It was quite tough. Anyway, the moment I saw him, it just changed my whole perspective on things. I really felt home was here.
That must have been really tough, though, because your whole experience to that point and all of the experiences that you're sharing with us now, whether it be cooking for VIPs in a tower or whether it be cooking in a roadhouse with a crocodile or whatever. I mean, these are experiences that have happened overseas. So you made that decision to come back here and to settle back in Malta and make Malta your home again. But as a chef, was that not a challenge?
It was definitely challenging, but it was also really exciting because I can finally, you know, put everything that I've learned along the way into my own style of cooking. So that was one of the things that I was always, you know, okay, I need to work. Let's see what people think of this universal food or whatever you want to call it. And it's been great. I mean, to this day, I've built a lot more courage and confidence in myself through everything that I've learned along the way, not just cooking.
So talk to me, you come back to Malta and you've brought this eclectic style of cooking and eclectic knowledge of cooking literally all over the world. And I suddenly perked up when you took on one of Malta's most staple foods, ftira, and you turned this into what looks like a gourmet product. Where did this come from? And you launched this in the middle of a pandemic.
So yes, I'm not gonna take full credit on that. So basically, the very first place I worked right after school, catering school, was a wine bar in St. Julian's. And basically the chef there, a super chef, he put that one of the dishes on the menu, on the wine bar menu, was an open ftira. I think it's been 18, 19 years now since then, and I've never forgotten about it, and it just was so good. And that's what I love about food. It creates a very almost tangible memory, you know. You can taste, and I couldn't believe no one's actually shaking things up with such a versatile product, traditional product that can be twisted and shaped and recreated, and it's not hard. It's not a hard product to bring out. So basically, again, it's thinking outside the box, which, you know, this is one of the first chefs that I've worked with, and I wanted to try and come up with a concept to really, you know, hyper-focus on this particular dish, snack, whatever you want to call it. So I said, okay, forget bread and butter, do something different. And I love a famous sandwich called the Reuben sandwich. So that was my starting point. So you've got that creaminess, that bechamel as a base. So I wanted to take it to the next level. So I wanted to smoke it just to make it a bit more interesting. And then it's all about the products that, you know, complement that. I said it's not hard to do, but it can be quite tricky at times, because you do get, when I'm creating them, I get really carried away sometimes. And I either put too much, or, you know, this ingredient is a standalone ingredient, so just put that. No, it's not enough. Like, come on. Like, how can that not be? So it's always trying to find the perfect balance.
One of the things that you do is you also are extremely good at videography and photography, and you make this food look incredible. It's a ftira, and it looks like a Michelin star product.
I wouldn't say that. No, they're absolutely delicious. And you know, it's one of those things that when you're cooking something so much of, you tend to get sick of it. To this day, I'm still I'm still eating my fair share.
You're still in love with Patera. Well, you have a number of other strings to your bow, but you also have an entity called Trust the Chef. Explain to me what Trust the Chef is.
So Trust the Chef basically is, it's a take on what I was doing in New Zealand. So basically that's my way of bringing a part of what I experienced there to Malta. It's a place where you kind of lose yourself and you just enjoy good food, good conversation, and good wine. It's simple. The whole thing about trusting the chef is you don't know what to expect. So you don't know what's going to come out of the kitchen. Most of the people are either referred or they know, you know, what I do. And it's a whole celebration of food. It's a full-on tasting
concept.
Hang on,
let me get this right. So I make sure that I've got this right, because I want to just understand this. You would be invited to someone's house or they come to a venue?
So they come to a venue.
Okay, but they sit down until 11 o'clock and it's a huge culinary experience, but they don't know what they're going to get.
No, so they don't. There's huge variety with, you know, the flavors, the ingredients, the textures, the methods.
This is playtime for you.
It is. It's awesome. I love it. It's actually was the perfect excuse, you know, to really, you know, get back into it and, you know, really play around.
This is a brilliant concept.
It's so much fun. Even in the kitchen, it's just, you know, we're like a bunch of kids, you know, dancing
and these,
around.
And these are dates that you have, that you publish before so people know this is going to happen and they have to book it and they have to come on these particular dates. It's not a Monday to Friday.
No, it's not. I wish I could do more. I'm trying to make the time, but it's pretty hard because there's a lot of preparation that goes into these nights. It's a full-on working up towards Saturday to get everything done for Monday.
I love this. This is such a great idea. Sam, I'm definitely coming to this. Thank you so much for being on The Interviewer. You have been an absolute delight. I have loved learning from you today, and I've loved finding out about your journey to where you are. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
To listen to this edition of The Interviewer again or other exciting interviews, head towards Spotify or SoundCloud and search for The Interviewer.